I want to make one correction on what I said a couple of weeks ago regarding Friedrich Nietzsche. I should have said that in the 1960s, the following message from Friedrich Nietzsche became a motto of the God is Dead movement. And what I did say, however, was that Friedrich Nietzsche said it in the 1960s. But that would be impossible because Nietzsche died in 1900. My good friend Fred Cragwick called that to my attention. So here's the quote from Friedrich Nietzsche. "Where is God gone? I mean to tell you, we have killed him. You and I, we are his murderers. Do we not hear the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? God is dead. God remains dead." Friedrich Nietzsche died in 1900 at 55 years of age. However, before that, at the age of 44 years of age, he suffered a collapse and a complete loss of his mental faculties. You remember in the book of Acts, when King Herod came out and his glowing robes and they were glistening off him, and the people said, "That's the voice of God. It's not a man. It's the voice of God." And he just kind of basked in the sunlight, and God struck him with worms in his stomach, and he just doubled over right there. Well, Friedrich Nietzsche suffered this collapse of his mental faculties. The breakdown was later ascribed to a kind of paresis or blood problems, and also that it was due to, they thought, a third stage of syphilis. But later diagnosis came to question that. Nietzsche lived his remaining years in the care of his mother until her death in 1897. And then after that, he was under the care of his sister Elizabeth. He died in 1900, what was thought to be a stroke. However, newer examinations and evaluations of all the medical evidence and the papers that were of extent have shown that he probably most certainly died of brain cancer. As a caretaker, his sister then began to edit some of his manuscripts, and she tended to have anti-Semitic feelings. And she began to edit his writings to try to move them toward anti-Semitism. He was not anti-Semitic. He was extremely opposed to anti-Semitism, and he was also opposed to nationalism. But his writings, because of his sister, became associated with the Nazis. Hitler loved some of the writings that she edited, and Friedrich Nietzsche became associated with German militarism, Nazism, although later 20th century scholars now say that was totally in error and has now been contradicted by the other research. So he said God is dead. You don't play around with God too much. You don't start defying God too much. And so in Proverbs, where we were last time, I want to pick it up in verse 6. Proverbs 13, verse 6. Righteousness guards the one whose way is blameless, but wickedness subverts the sinner. Let me read that in the New English Translation. Righteousness guards the one who lives with integrity, and wickedness overthrows the sinner. You know, the image of righteousness means the uprightness, and it suggests a certain amount of strength. Uprightness, you know, think about it. If you are upright, what are you? You know, you're standing straight, you're standing, it implies strength and confidence. It implies a person well-grounded, you know. You can't be moved easily. You're not pushed around. Righteousness, uprightness, stability, confidence. as a figure of the mind and character, uprightness denotes the moral principle. It denotes fixed purpose. You have a purpose. It's based from faith in God and His moral order, His moral guide, His moral structure. As a consequence of righteousness, we have a state of security, right in the middle of danger. Freedom from evil. Righteousness is a freedom from evil. So the Bible says here in verse 6, righteousness guards the one whose way is blameless. But what does wickedness do? It subverts the sinner. Wickedness and ruin, if you want to take how the Proverbs look at wickedness and ruin are like interchangeable thoughts. The ruin begins with the inward decay. Inside people, they start inwardly decaying from the moral principles. Now, by the way, that can happen to you as an individual, to me as an individual, and it can happen to groups, it can happen to organizations, and it can happen to nations. Decay. The first thing is the decay of moral principle. And then after that, you know, the whole thing's begin. It is then consummated, starts with inward decay of moral principle. Finally, it bursts outwardly in decay. Decay of reputation, decay of possessions, decay of health, decay of life, decay of interactions, decay of relationships. When we take people through the Zelnick chart of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you take them through all this decay that they go through when they are on their way down. They were on their way down. Almost all addictions have that same process. It's just a decay. And you'll see, at first, they start having decay with their relationships. They'll have decay with their jobs. Then they start becoming unkempt in their person. They don't take care of themselves. They start, you know, not neglecting their appearance, their health, their physical well-being, their hygiene, everything. They just start going downhill, and it keeps going, and it won't stop until they hit bottom or they make a change. They decide to come back. So wickedness and ruin are almost interchangeable thoughts in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 13, now in verse 7. And we've all seen this in life, right? There is one who pretends to be rich but has nothing. Ever see people pretending to be rich? They got nothing, but they like to pretend that they've got a lot, you know? And then, of course, there are others who pretend to be poor when they have a lot of wealth. People just pretend to be poor. The Hunt brothers used to carry their lunch to their offices in a little paper bag, like they were just poor. They wouldn't go out to eat, you know. I can't afford it, you know. And different people will pretend to be poor, even though they've got a lot. They won't even take care of themselves. They won't feed themselves. They won't go to the grocery store properly. Just because, I don't know. It's a strange kind of thing, but it does happen to people. But here's what the proverb says in chapter 12 and verse 9, a parallel here. Better is he who is lightly esteemed. You know, a lot of people like to put on the airs, like I'm very rich, but they have nothing. But better is he who is lightly esteemed and has a servant than he who honors himself and lacks bread. You're better off if people don't respect. Now, we had a member in the church in Akron. He was, he was not proud. He ran a trash truck. He picked up trash and stuff like that, and that's what he did. He had a contract with the city. He had his own trash truck. He owned it, and he contracted with the city. But that's what he did for a living. What did you do? He said, well, I'm a garbage collector. I'm a trash collector. That's what I do. But he made good money. You know, he didn't have a, what you know, a lot of people like, well, I'm a dentist, or I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a this, I'm a that, you know, well, you know, because those are prestigious things, but I pick up trash. I collect people's trash. But you know what? He was prosperous. He made good money. So better is he who is maybe lightly esteemed, they don't think he's so, but has a servant, he can afford things, than he who honors himself but lacks bread. You know, acts like he has a lot, but he lacks bread. Better is he, this is from the Complete Jewish Bible, it says, better to be despised and have a servant than to boast of one's status and have nothing to eat. You know, look where I am. I have this degree and that degree. Why, you got nothing to eat? Oh, you haven't done very much, well with it. Verse 8, Proverbs 13, verse 8. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth. But the poor hears no rebuke. I'll read that in the New English Translation. The ransom of a person's life is his wealth. But the poor hears no threat. He doesn't hear a threat to him. Now, when you think about it, the rich are the ones more susceptible to being kidnapped. You know, people, if you want to kidnap some child and hold them for ransom, you don't want to kidnap the guy that's living in a very, you know, small shack in the poor area of town, because you're not likely to get much in, you know, he doesn't have anything to give you. So the ransom is of a man's life is his wealth. But the poor man, you know, you can't blackmail a poor man. He doesn't have enough money. The rich then are exposed to legal threats, physical violence because of their wealth, legal threats. So what do rich people do? They often take out extra insurance, they take out other things to protect themselves from attack. The ransom of man's life. But the poor hears no rebuke. Now, I've told many of my clients, this one sweet couple, he got a couple of tickets. You know, you remember they had these, used to have these cameras up. You remember the cameras? And they'd give you a ticket if you went through a red, you know, close to a red light or going to speeding. And they had the cameras, you know, and then they would photograph you and send it to you in the mail. And this is your car. And there's your license plate. And a clear picture of maybe you behind the wheel of the car. And, well, he got one of these tickets, okay? And I think he was listening to one of the talk show hosts. I think it was Bill Handel or somebody like that, and said, yeah, throw it away. He said, they were giving advice. Yeah, who knows you got it? So he said, so he threw it away. Well, he got another one in the mail. So you need to pay this. And so he threw that away. And he got another one, adding the fine. The fine is now going to be this and this and this. And we're threatening your license, your driver's license. You won't be able to renew it and all that. And, you know, he said, well, you think they're going to come after me? I said, let me ask you a question. What do you have? Do you own your own home? No. Do you have stocks and bonds? No. Do you have gold and silver? No. Do you have property elsewhere? No. What do you own? I own my two old cars. Okay, that's it. How much are they worth? Maybe $600, maybe $400. I said, you're sue-proof. You're virtually, well, where do you get your income? All Social Security, he gets it from the government. That's his own totally retirement. He has no other funds. I said, you know, you're about as sue-proof as you can get in society. You're sue-proof. And so I said, I don't think they're going to come after you. What do you got? They're not going to come after you. So sure enough, he said he was fearful that they, you know, they threatened, they're sending this to the DMV, they're going to send all this. Came time to renew his driver's license, he went in and he renewed it. Now, He didn't have a big violation. He had one of these little small things, but you know what they kept building up because he didn't pay it right away? He can't afford to pay it. It built up to, I don't know, $600, $700, and they finally stopped. Los Angeles got rid of those cameras. It was a loser. Most people threw it away and they never paid it. A lot of people never paid it. So they lost lots of money because they had to pay the company that put up the sign. So the poor man doesn't hear this threat. What are you going to threaten me about? What are you going to take from me? I got nothing. You're going to take, what are you going to take from a person that has nothing? And you know, in the United States of America, there's no debtor prison. You can be in debt, and you don't go to prison for debt. Now, you won't get any credit. You know, if you want something and you need credit, you won't get any credit. But you won't go, and they'll hound you for everything you have. And you know, you got to virtually be dead poor to keep the creditors from the door, because they will take whatever you have. But if you have nothing, what are they going to take? And you can't go to prison for it in America. They used to throw you in prison in Europe. Yes, the poor man doesn't hear that rebuke. The rich person does, however. Do you think a person has a good job? If you have a job, you have an apartment, you have a condo, you have a house, you have property, you think you're not going to pay it? You're going to pay it because you're fearful that they will come after you. And they will get you have enough to be sued for. All right, Proverbs 13 and verse 9. The light of the righteous rejoices, but the lamp of the wicked goes out. Let me read that in the verse, New English Translation. The light of the righteous shines brightly, but the lamp of the wicked goes out. Now, in the Bible, light is a symbol of a number of things. But in the Proverbs here, you'll see that light is a symbol of joy. It's a symbol of joy, sort of like a happy time. Whereas darkness is not a symbol. Darkness is a symbol of gloom, doom. Did you ever watch a movie and they have the scenes, it's a dark, it's at night, and they're just doing on, and it's not, it's all scary at night and all that. And you can't wait until the scene changes and it's a bright daylight time and everything seems, you know, for me, it gives me a lift when it moves into a bright daylight time. Yes. Light is a symbol of joy. And movies use this, dark scenes, light scenes. Cheerfulness, then. The burning of the light is the symbol of a good man's heart. He sits in the center and enjoys a clear day. Whereas gloom is the natural emblem of sorrow. Putting out of the lamp in darkness is the emblem of extinction, of joy, of hope, of truth, of all that makes life worth living. Putting out the lamp. So here's this proverb, verse 9. The light of the righteous rejoices or shines brightly, the lamp of the wicked. Again, once again, Proverbs is that constant contrast between, and you see it, you know, early on, contrast between the righteous and the wicked. You don't want to be on the wicked side. You want to be on the righteous side, in spite of the play called Wicked. I think there was a play. All right, verse 10, Proverbs 13, verse 10. Through insolence comes nothing but strife, but wisdom is with those who receive counsel. Wisdom is with those who receive counsel. Let me read that in the New English Translation. With pride comes only contention, but wisdom is with the well-advised. Pride, insolence, presumptiveness, arrogance. That word in the Hebrew, with the word that's translated pride, it's translated insolence or pride. It means, it suggests that pride here means the contempt for the opinions of others. You have a contempt for them. The wise listen to advice rather than argue out of stubborn pride. So to advise or to counsel means to consult together, to take counsel. It means being well advised, receiving advice or consultation. Okay? And you don't want, you know, in the book of James, chapter 3, it talks about, you know, this wisdom, talking about, you know, the wisdom of the world, the worldly wisdom, is earthy, natural, and demonic. That's in James 3, verse 15. But verse 16 says, "For where there is jealousy and selfishness, there is disorder and every evil practice." Verse 17, "But the wisdom which is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and without hypocrisy." That's the kind of wisdom. Let's notice that proverb again. With pride comes only contention. But wisdom, good wisdom, is with the well-advised. And if you want the wisdom which is from above, it is peaceable. It is gentle. It is reasonable. It is full of mercy and in good fruits, unwavering, without pretense. That's the kind of wisdom we want. That's the kind of wisdom you want. It's the kind of wisdom that stays with you in life and makes life joyous in some ways. And yet, you know, in the book of Ecclesiastes, with much wisdom becomes a certain amount of sorrow. You see it and you say, well, here's the sorrow. Sorrow for people that, you know, not acting right, ruining their lives, people to being deceived the wrong way. There are a lot of people so easily deceived because they just don't know, and they're just taken down the pathway to their own destruction and to their own ill health and everything else. Proverbs 13 and verse 11. "Wealth obtained by fraud dwindles." Now, the New English Translation puts it like this: "Wealth gained quickly will dwindle away." The New International Version puts it like this: "Dishonest money dwindles away." The New Jerusalem Bible puts it this way: "A sudden fortune will dwindle away." Okay? Sudden fortune. You know, you get money all at once. Here comes a big load of money, okay? You win the lottery. That's what everybody wants, you know? Why do you think people buying that ticket every month, and when they got that dollar, they got that $2, $10, I've had clients tell me every week, $10 for tickets, $5 for tickets. They can't afford much, but $5 for a lottery ticket in the hope of winning. And remember what David Letterman had this man on, who was an expert in statistics and calculations and risk things. And he asked this man, "What are my chances of winning the lottery?" And the man said, "They're just a little better than if you had never been born." Just slightly better than if you had never been born. Okay, but there are people with the lottery because they want to have this mound of money that comes in. And what happens when you get that mound of money that comes in? Dwindles, goes away quickly. So here's the scripture: wealth obtained quickly by fraud. That phrase can mean you did it in a way that wasn't right. Dwindles. Wealth gained quickly dwindles away. Wealth that comes suddenly, a sudden fortune or dishonest money, windles away. You know, we have the old proverb that we have? What is it? Easy come. What is it? Easy go. It's almost like a law in the universe. You got it easy, it's going to go easy. You don't got to hold on to it. It's, for some reason, it just kind of goes away. But here's the last part of that proverb. Here's the last part of the proverb. What does it say? But the one who gathers it little by little will become rich. The one who gathers it little by little. Or as this one, but whoever gathers money little by little will make it grow. Here's another one. Accumulation little by little is the way to riches, says the New Jerusalem Bible. A healthy acquisition of wealth is gradual. You don't want a get-rich-quick scheme. What you want is a get-rich-slow scheme. It takes work, savings, work, savings, work. You spend less than you bring in, and over the years, you will become rich. You will become prosperous. You won't become, Oprah Winfrey, or you won't become Donald Trump. You know, he's got lots of money. And money is a power. You want money. You want money in the bank. You want some. Yes, you do. Because when you have no money, you have little and less power in life. You don't want to have no power. So, but you don't get it by grabbing a big, trying to get it, winning by the lottery. You get it by working a little bit, saving, and always spending less. And if you can't afford it, for the most part, what? You don't buy it. You just don't have it. You just, I'm not going to have it. There are a lot of people who buy it, whether they can afford it or not, and they pay for it with interest rates and all the other. So wealth, acquisition of wealth is gradual. The result is steady industry, steady industriousness, steady working. Rapid fortunes then, strokes of luck, are certainly not to be envied or viewed with, oh, isn't that guy lucky? He hit the jackpot. He hit the lottery. Because it's easy come. And guess what? Easy go. You see people hit jackpots? How much money do they often have afterward? It goes. Proverbs 13, verse 12. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. But desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Now, the New English Translation tries to tell you, it's going to make it like this. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is like a tree of life. It isn't the tree of life. They say it's like a tree of life. Okay? Think about it. At the end of your life, you have hopes. You have and hopes deferred. You're trying for something. You're working on something. You're working on a project. And you almost have it, but then it has to be put off because you can't. It can't be done now. It can't, and it makes the heart a little sick. Your mind, you get a little depressed. It means depression. You don't feel good mentally. But listen to this. But the desire fulfilled. You have a desire. I have a goal. I want this done. I want to achieve this. I want to accomplish this. And it comes about. You get it done. Somehow you fulfill it. It's like a tree of life. It's just a shot of energy. It's a shot of, it's like an elixir. It's like one of these, the old elixirs. So you pour yourself one of these old things that they used to snake oil, and you drink it, and it just buoys you up because you fulfilled it. Failure, then, to realize one's hopes can be very depressing, discouraging. People can bear frustration for only so long. In the Hebrew, the word desire, it means a desire that comes. And when it says But the desire fulfilled is like a tree of life. It means a desire that comes. It means a wish that comes true. That wish that comes true is you wanted it, you desired it, and now you have it. A lot of that, however, has to be that you worked for it, you planned for it. You have to do more than wish. We talked about that last time. You have to do more than wish. You have to want. You have to plan. You have to work the plan. And then you will have it. Those are the things you have to do. You can't just wish it. You can't just want it. And you have your hope deferred makes the heart sick, but fulfill the desires. Now, at the end of life, according to Eric Erickson, who was a psychologist and a psychiatrist who tended to come with a theory of what he called the psychosocial stages of life. The psychosocial stage. His first stage was trust versus distrust. And then you go on, and the middle stage, teenage stage, is identity versus identity diffusion or confusion. When kids are in the teenage stages, they're looking for, they're trying out a lot of things. You ever see kids when they put their hair this way, and they got to try that, and they got to do it this way, and they're looking for an identity. They're looking for how can they have an identity of who are they? Because we all have to find out who we are. Because you have to have what is called an identity to yourself. And as you get through the stages, you go on. And one of the last stage is integrity versus despair. When you're at the last stages of your life, do you look on your life? Yes, well, I had a lot of fulfilling times. Wishes that came true, things I wanted, I got. Look here, I wanted a plan to get this, and we got it. We wanted to do this, and we did it. Versus despair. You know, none of my dreams came true. No, things didn't go well. You know, things aren't going well. They're not going to go well. And how about the man that walks into this movie theater not just a few days ago? Goes into a movie theater. 59 years of age. He doesn't have much to live for. He's estranged from his family. He doesn't have very many friends. It doesn't sound like he's very successful. Life has gone down the drain. He's in despair. Takes out a gun. And he just decides, sits at the back of the theater, I'm going to start shooting. Bang, 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 bang. And he killed two. And then he killed himself. But, you know, the cops started to come after him, and he shot himself. Despair. Integrity versus despair. You come to the place of your life, but how do you get to this despair? Because you didn't plan. You didn't follow a plan. You didn't do the things that it took to get there. It doesn't just happen. People think life just happens. It does happen. It's happening now. But if you're not doing something while it's happening, what's going to happen to you at the end of your life? The film doesn't just keep going on and on, you know. Think of your life as a movie, you know, a biography, a movie. It just doesn't keep going on. One day it ends. It comes to the end. It comes to the old time. There used to be a joke about a guy who went to the doctor. And he asked the doctor, how am I? The guy said, doctor said, you know, you're really in terrible shape. He said, well, you know, doctor, if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Okay, if I had known I was going to live this long, if you had known you were going to live this long, you would have planned better for things. You would have made arrangements for retirement. You would have made arrangements for this. You would have done a lot of things differently if you had known you were going to live this long. We know we're going to live this long. Where is the end? Where is the future? Where is the end? I know people who lived all their lives or a great part of their lives thinking the end was just around the next corner. They never planned for anything. They never focused on what was going to happen for 10 or 15 years out because they They thought it was going to end in 10 or 15 years. They could never focus what was going to happen in five or six years out, because what's the use? It's going to end in 5 or 10 years. So they postponed this, they postponed that, they postponed this, they avoided that, they wouldn't take that class because, you know, they wouldn't go for that degree because it's going to take a number of years. They wouldn't go for this, they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't do this. When is the end going to come? How long do you have to live? The end will come at the end of your life. Don't think much before that. The end will come when you're ready to die. And we've lived all of our lives, many of us, thinking the end is just around the corner, and it just keeps going year after year. Did you ever think we were going to be in the year 2015? And I never thought we could ever get to 2000. Because I'd have to be over 60. And that can't be. That's not going to happen. We can't get to 2000. We did. We went zipping by it like a rocket ship. Right? 2000 is a long time ago. Okay? So here we are. And we're moving on. We're moving on. So if you're going to make plans, make plans. Make plans. You want to be a lawyer? Do you want to be a doctor? Do you want to be a chiropractor? Do you want to be some? Go school. Go take it. It's not too late. It's only too late when you die. It's not too late now. And you owe it to yourself to make the plans, do for yourself what you want to do. It's not too late. Take a lesson from Eleanor Landing. 102, coming up to 103, and she plans to be my chiropractor. No, I was just kidding on that, Eleanor, but she's still adventurous. She's traveled. She goes places. And she comes back, and she can tell you about it. She's looking forward to life. And she's lived a good life, planned well. Do the same.